Good evening.
Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, and welcome to the Cycles of Change. I'm your host, David Katzmeier, on our pilot episode, our first test program before our official launch date of June 21 of this year, when we will be doing weekly broadcasts at 6 p.m. Eastern every Thursday night. This series, we're going to discuss the cycles of time, the cycles of change in society. Do we just happen to go on a line of physical causality and sequences of events at random with nothing more than action, reaction, response? Or is there also order interwoven in the fabric of our consciousness, our science, our society, the universe, and the world in which we live? If so, I think we will be able to discern that there are cycles in the movement of time and a dance in all that we know. With that in mind, we take a look at history to see what's happened until now, what sequences and patterns we can determine, and figure out where we may be in the river's course at this moment. If we understand that, where we were and where we are, we may be able to form some insights on where we are going. One of the more significant lessons in history to help us do this is what we can learn of what's left from the ancient Mayan civilization. The calendrix developed by the ancient Mayans was more sophisticated than any other calendrix in the world at that time. They knew the duration of the orbit of Venus before anyone in Europe. They understood the precession of the equinoxes, perhaps, and they were very accurate in mapping the motions in the heavens. Consequently, they developed a series of calendars, short calendars from 260 days long to longer calendars of an annual cycle and great calendars of more than 5,000 years in length. It's that last calendar that has drawn a lot of attention. It's known as the Mayan Long Count, and that is the calendar of the many Mayan calendars that is scheduled to end on December 21 of this year. Although the Mayan records do not say anything will or will not happen on that time, it is going to end. It does not foretell the end of the world because this calendar has ended before. Projecting back on August 31, 3113 BC was the last time it ended. But nonetheless, we can learn something from a civilization that is so in tune to the celestial cycles and mapping the cycles of time as part of its culture, apparently. Maybe there is something that we can learn from that today. There is a merry-go-round in history. On that subject tonight, I have a revered friend and colleague, Bill Traister, who has been studying Mayanism for many years, and he's taught me a thing or two when it comes to the ancient culture. He's writing a book. May tell us a little bit about it, and he has a lot to say about the calendrix and the interpretation of it. So let's bring Bill on and say hello here on our pilot episode of The Cycles of Change. All right, let's click a button. Let's see if that one does it.
Oh.
Hello, Bill, are you there?
Yes, I'm here, David. How are you today?
Oh, very good. I thank you for taking part in our program tonight. And, Bill,
well,
you are on. We are connected.
Yes, we are.
That is good. That is good, Bill. Okay, Bill, do you want to first start by telling our listeners a little bit about you?
Well, I've been working, I kind of consider myself an author aspirant about the ancient Maya civilization, and I've been for years working on a novel that, if the publishers will allow me to be called, it called would be called Maya, subtitled Spirits of the Jaguar. And it's a sprawling saga set in the ancient and magical Maya kingdom where a wrong family struggles against prophecy, power, treachery, and forbidden love, and ending the 400-year dynastic reign of a town called Copan, which is located present-day in Honduras. And so
now,
it's,
your story is interwoven with historical facts due to a great deal of intensive research, like the timing of the ending of the empire and the some of the things, and actually even some of the characters in your story are right from history. Is that not true?
Absolutely. Many of my characters in my book were actually living, breathing people, and as well as the gods that are in the story that are written about that were deciphered by the outstanding epigraphers that worked in Copan for, the last 30 to 40 years.
Amazing. And to make this an enriched story, you then added characters of your own. Deerfoot is the main character in this story, is he not?
Yes, Deerfoot is one of the two co-protagonists in this story, and he's basically a guy that has the crap kicked out of him for his entire life. He goes on a jaguar hunt and captures a black jaguar and brings it back into Copan during a ending of a fire season festival, which is basically the end of the hot summer season. And basically the town erupts when he brings in this magical beast, a black jaguar, upside down, of course, on a pole. And, the king is kind of, he's not really certain he liked that happening on one of his big ceremonial days.
Indeed. You know, I've gotten some bits and pieces of the story as you were writing and formulating these tales and doing the research to make it historically accurate as well as appealing to the reader. Do you find that many of the human tales in this, the love, the adventure, the war, the conflicts, the triumphs and the defeats, are something that has been woven throughout history and is going on today just as well as it was going on in 8th or 9th century Maya culture?
Well, most certainly. I kind of am on the belief that most civilized cultures obviously had forms of government and religion. Obviously, there was a social status, the elite all the way to the commoner, the peasant farmer, and then there's the artisans, the stone carvers, the lapidaries, etc., that were kind of a middle class, and that's very similar to the way the ancient Maya culture was. There was the commoner farmer, and they had to pay taxes just like we do in the form of subsidizing, in the form of food to the elite. And there were, sandal makers. There was obviously fantastically talented artists. Copan, Honduras, there's a museum that is loaded with just striking carvings and napping of obsidian such that the technique is not even able to be reproduced today. So in my novel, I try and incorporate, love, tragedy, hard work, separation, humor, the culture as far as what foodstuffs they ate, the general climate back then, and then also the socio-political and geopolitical events that were occurring during the time frame, which occurs, I guess basically the ending of my novel will be at 822 AD, and the beginning is around 765 AD.
So many of the things that play out in this story and that you're seeking to keep historically accurate as well as putting in your characters to tell the human story is a story that has perhaps played out many times with many different other characters in different parts of the world. The rise and fall of Rome and the Egyptian empires, our new machine age, and so on and so forth. And the nations of North America before Columbus and so forth. So when we see these societal structures from here to India to Africa and everywhere else, we find that we often recreate the same patterns and systems over and over again. And so it becomes a story that doesn't duplicate itself, but it repeats itself in certain ways with different players, different times, and different cultures, but often the same play. Would you say that's true after looking back to research so deeply something that happened in 9th century Central America and your understanding of the world today as we know it?
Yes, I completely agree with that. To quote one of my favorite authors, Ernest Hemingway, he said, history doesn't repeat itself, it rhymes. And throughout all cultures, there are very many of the same types of things. We are human beings, and we have greed. We have all kinds of emotions that force us to make decisions. Mother Earth does different things, too, like causes droughts. And when you run out of food, are you going to let yourself pass away, or are you going to go find it somewhere? And that in itself causes possibly some sort of warfare or at least amongst clans from one valley to the next in different regions of the world. If they had more food than you and you were out of food, you went and got it. And that's just part of the natural course of evolving human history.
So we're going to have geographical border wars and, nations side-by-side or nations city-state battling over resources because they're needed. And whether it's water, sometimes it's food, currently it may be oil or what have you, or even the quest for gold. We tend to have, limited access to resources. The demand exceeds it, and that can lead to a warlike nation when there isn't cooperation.
Yes, and there's all kinds of economic bubbles that have happened in the past, as you may be aware of the Tulip War that happened over in Denmark back in, I guess it was the 16th century. When things become prized, whether they're art pieces or some sort of metal or even shells or whatever, or in the case of Denmark, tulip bulbs, it can cause a lot of consternation between borders and neighboring cultures.
And inflation that we see is nothing new either. During the time of the Tulip Wars, weren't the values of a single tulip just absolutely mind-boggling of what you could trade one tulip for, or the prospect of a tulip that's growing?
Well, according to legend, one tulip bulb cost more than a house, believe it or not. And then all of a sudden, one tulip bulb could be held for, back in those days, compared to our economy right now, $2. That's how far it crashed. So you're saying, just throwing out a number here, but saying one tulip bulb one day was worth like $150,000, and then a few weeks or months later, it was worth $2. And so when you weave in the economies into ancient cultures, along with disease, pestilence, flooding, dryness, overuse of resources, i.e., in the case of the ancient Maya, a major resource that was definitely overused was wood. It was cut down, and therefore the microclimates changed. Therefore, quite possibly, as I write my book, the underworld gods were looking up at the below the earth, and they were looking and they were seeing no roots of trees, and the overworld gods were looking down and seeing no canopy. Therefore, the gods thought, why send rain there? And I'm sorry, go ahead.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I just wanted to remind our listeners that you're listening to The Cycles of Change, a study of rhythms in the affairs of man. And we're speaking with Phil Traister, who has studied the Mayan culture for a number of years, discussing what he has found in his research as he is composing his book on 9th century Mayan culture, a combination of historical fact and a beautiful fictional story from the creation of Bill. Thank you. Please go on.
Yes. Well, when we talk about the Maya, the Maya were city-states. It's much like having Philadelphia is one city, is one country, and New York City is another country, and et cetera. And so there was great trade between these cities. And another form of warfare was over the who held the trade routes. And when the Maya culture went on for, oh, they say that the current is 250 AD to 900 AD, but there's really been discoveries that was based upon the earliest written or discovery of the earliest writings, which has been moved back well into BC times, about 100 BC, based upon an archaeologist named Bill Saturno, who discovered a wall in Guatemala while seeking refuge from the heat as he was lost in the jungle, and it was went down as one of the greatest Maya discoveries ever because its time frame shifted from 250 AD then back 350 years earlier to 100 AD, which might bring us to the Maya calendar.
Well, it's important to understand when things happen because when really changes what. Because as you mentioned in the example, the tulip worth the equivalent of, say, $150,000 one day to becoming worth about $2 within a relative short time. The real key issue then was when. When did it become overinflated? And then when did it hit a bust, the boom and bust cycle, as it's usually referred? And these things are these are the kind of things that we create. We build our civilizations. We place different values, high and low, on the things we seek to acquire. But why do we do them when? And the when is something that seems to be moving in rhythm. So when we date the cultural changes that we can see in every civilization, we would do wise to look back through time and look for the patterns, because I believe when we do, we'll find that those patterns are moving in rhythm. That's why research from people like you, Bill, are so important to us, because you're acquiring such a deep understanding with compiled with detail on how things happened and when they did. So in view of that, when you're doing the research, have you found any threads through the time that you have studied so deeply in your research and your numerous trips to Central America, where you got involved with the land, the people today? Do you have any messages for us on how things may be relevant or parallel to the rhythms that have been leading up to now and are still in play today?
Well, obviously, the Maya, one of the reasons why I was kind of alluding to the different inner city states or city states, in that not all Maya cities collapsed for the same reason. That's kind of back in the days, the 80s or so, when there was some understanding of epigraphy, but only maybe 5% of what's understood today, was that the Maya were a very peaceful culture. They didn't have they didn't have sacrifices. They didn't have wars. They're like almost nexus. But through the interpretations of the glyphs, the Maya actually were very warlike, and especially as the culture came forward towards, say, from 250 AD up to the 7th and 8th centuries, warfare surfaced a great deal more because there's more people. And when there's more people, there's more stress on the resources, such as trees and water, foodstuffs, et cetera. How are you going to build a home if the king orders a decree no more wood is allowed to be chopped down? Because as far as the eye can see, the king can't see any trees. So there's a lot of evidence toward that end that it's a combination of various events for each city. Some economic, some definitely religion was turned on its head, and political reasons why the Maya culture went out of business, so to speak. A lot of people think the Maya just completely vanished, and some of the realized ones may in the past have talked to me about how they turned into white light and disappeared. Well, then I answer back and say, well, how do you propose that there's 7 million living Maya today? And not a one of them believe that the 12/21/12 date is the end of the world.
No, it has ended before. If it's only 5,000 plus years long, then it's ended many times. So Now, if they're studying a calendar that goes through a round in 5,000 plus years, could it be that they were following a cycle or a section of a cycle, that they would have a duration, a count that begins and ends with that period?
Well, most certainly. The Maya were geniuses at tracking these stars. I kind of like it akin to us watching TV. It was a thing to do back then, was take the smartest people, put them on top of a flat-top stone building so their backs are warm when it got cold at night, and just on a clear night watch the stars and track them and have conversations. And over generations of time, you can tell from the five wandering stars, the planets, that being Mars, Venus, the Moon, Jupiter, and Saturn, and they could track those and actually then begin to do mathematical calculations and be able to predict hundreds of years into the future when, say, a total eclipse of the sun would occur.
They would predict that in advance.
Yes, they absolutely could. There's no doubt, even in my novel, I have a total eclipse of the sun, which actually did occur. According to Dr. Mary Ellen Miller and NASA, within pretty much moments of the period of my book, of which I wrote about 5 years earlier, and was quite stunned to find out that I was that lucky to figure out something somehow magically or whatever. But the point is that the Maya definitely understood the cycles, and their whole calendar was based upon a kind of astrology. And you would go, say, there was days that you were not allowed to pay a bill. How about that?
Okay, so there was sort of like a day off. So if they were changing their practices and their culture to coincide with what they found in the cycles of the heavens and so forth, and then they were able to follow these things with great accuracy, that they could pinpoint an eclipse in advance, is it much of a stretch of imagination to say that studying the many cycles around us not only would forecast positions of the bodies and the eclipses to come, but might also forecast the affairs of a culture? After all, Shakespeare said there are tides in the affairs of man. And if they had certain strictures on what you can and cannot do based on what time it was on a calendar, did they believe that these celestial bodies influence us and that we should pattern our lives accordingly? And maybe they are even a forecast to what kind of influences we'll see in the future.
Absolutely. On a year-to-year basis, the Maya would actually tell the people when to plant based upon calendrical observations, that being the stars at night and where the sun was at sunset and sunrise. And so just on a yearly or seasonal basis, there were cycles going on. And when you go into the macro cycles, there is cultures all over the world that were doing the same things. I'm not an expert on China or Africa or Babylonia or the Etruscans in Italy or any of that kind of, those societies. But I'm pretty aware, I'm pretty sure that they themselves had some sort of calendar that told them when to do things. And then as the cycles went on, in the future, I'm sure that there were parts of the future being predicted based upon a lot of different factors, not just the calendar or where the stars were in the sky, but also the general sentiments of the population at whatever time. So in other words,
so on an annual cycle, you would decide when you're going to plant. In the exchange of commerce, there were certain days you were not allowed to pay debts and so forth. And it was a very ordered culture. And yes, their calendars, there many ones, they were fractal, were they not? I mean, they had a 260-day Zolkin cycle and also a 260-year pattern that they followed. They had a 365-day Hav, which is a solar year, 365-year cycle, a 52-day cycle in the calendar, and a 52-year calendar round. And so when we look at the fractal relationship that they had with these calendars that interweave with each other, it's interesting to note that when we get up to the scale of the zodiac is referred to as the great year. And so there may be seasons. Each age of the zodiac lasting 2,160 years long is like 1 hour in the 12-hour clock. So if we understand the patterns that we can find in the seasons of a year, maybe we can understand the seasons of the ages as we progress through larger cycles up to the precession of the equinoxes, the great year, the zodiac, and even cycles beyond that until we get to the 432-million-year cycle of Brahman, who opens his eyes and closes his eyes and the universe is created. So would you say that we may be able to discern patterns, great and small, if we start understanding how our culture changes, how it moves in rhythm, and it influences things great and small? And if we understand the pattern that's happening in a fraternity, we might understand the patterns that are happening in a nation over many years and in the different changes of culture in the world community over the centuries.
That's a great and eloquently put point there, David. Yes, I truly believe that as our Earth becomes smaller, as the internet has affected everything, such that here I am on a phone in my study with you, and you could be in Timbuktu, and we could be still having this. The world, from an information and technology standpoint, is really smaller than ever. And so that in itself is a cycle of information. And you could go all the way back to China with their invention of writing over 5,000 years ago, or put into the cycles of distribution of information upon the invention of the Gutenberg press, on and on and on. There are so many. It's a really fun thing to look at because it's the seeds of time and the spirals of time that really intrigue me as cultures around the world today interrelate and try to solve the problems of the greedy.
An important message to understand the spirals of time and how they interrelate, and the lessons that we can learn anywhere may give us insights to what is happening everywhere. We're approaching here our final minute in the program. Bill, I want to thank you for being part of our pilot program. We're certainly going to invite you back to talk more about the Mayan culture, the workings of your novel, and the Mayan calendar. So we would like you to come back and see us soon and the next month after we go live on June 21. So this is concluding our first program on the cycles of change. We hope that you tune back in and listen to us every Thursday night at 6 p.m. You can find us at blogtalkradio.com/cycles. And you can learn more at my website, kalarhythms.org. That's kalarhythms.org. Thank you for listening, and we look forward to bringing you more in the weeks to come.